Pigweed here. Today we review a porter and discuss Hungary. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crow Hill. Good evening, Crow Hill.
Good evening, Pigweed.
What's on your mind?
Well, you used a funny word there.
Yeah.
You said we're discussing Hungary, but I thought we were talking about hunger. You know, it's Lent, and
right.
And I am hungry. It
right.
just seemed like a funny way to use the word there. I mean, you know, I'm not eating
Wait
as many snacks and chocolate and stuff. And
I don't have any food here.
Well, isn't that what we're talking? We're talking about being hungry.
No, we're talking about the country of Hungary.
The country of Hungary.
Yes, you didn't notice the spelling back here with the little A stuck in there.
Oh, that kind of Hungary.
Yes, that kind of Hungary.
Hungary.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
well, that's okay. What? How about if I'm thirsty?
Well, thirsty I can help you with.
Okay, all right.
Yes, that's I can good. Because I have a robust porter by Smutty Nose Brewing in somewhere in New Hampshire.
Smutty Nose. I'm not going to think too much about what that means.
So the robust, I think... Porters, people look at dark beers and think that they're going to be high in calories and high in alcohol. Not so. Porters are really 5 percenters is normal.
They're usually
and
pretty normal beers.
Robust in this in their minds is a 6.2.
So, okay, you know, so just a little
it's
robust.
It's not an imperial porter. It's just it's just robust.
Yeah, well that's
so
good.
Give it a go. It's you'd expect something roasty or a little bit less roasty than a stout.
But dark still, with some dark notes. And this is actually quite good. Yeah, it does. Sometimes I don't like it when somebody, in order to make a robust porter or an imperial porter, what they basically do is make it stout, more stouty. They put in more roasted flavor, and generally speaking,
nice.
Yeah, it is nice. It has dark notes to it, but it's not the roasty stout kind of flavor.
Right, not coffee-ish.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Good job there, Hampton, New Hampshire.
Yeah, that's quite nice.
Robust
I like that
porter.
Yeah, very nice. And a nice lingering aftertaste, too.
Right.
With some of those dark malts.
Yeah
very good.
Sticks,
all right.
Sticks to the tongue.
We have to find out what else these boys do.
All right. Yes. So Hungary is the capital
so
of
Budapest.
So where in
the world are we talking about?
Yes, that's a good thing. And it's easy to confuse Bucharest with Budapest.
Okay.
I think Bucharest is Romania and Budapest is
Hungary. Okay.
And yes. So let's give us who are our neighbors here, real quick.
We'll go
around the horn. You go clockwise.
So 6 o'clock is Serbia. 8 o'clock is Croatia. 8:30 is Slovenia. 10 o'clock is Austria. 11 o'clock is Slovakia.
And up in the corner
and
we
up
have
in the corner there. 2 o'clock is Ukraine.
And a big chunk then, of Romania.
Yeah,
to the east.
3 o'clock is Romania. Yeah.
So that's quite a neighborhood, and
quite a lot of countries to be connected to. There.
Yes, yeah. for the size of the country, and it's the origins are mysterious.
Hmm.
They say that they semi nomadic people coming out of the Ural Mountains in like 800 BC.
Okay.
For just that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so what some people call them the Magars.
Okay.
But another person I've listened to, he says, yes, but in the historical record, they're called the Ugari, which is where we get the name Hungary. So
okay.
I kind of like the sound of that one, too. Who knows? Yep. Probably the Romans probably called them the Ugari. And
sure. Yeah. Yep.
It was part of the Pannonia, the in the Roman Empire. But how they maintained their own distinct language is what I find most fascinating because, you know, when you go around, when we went around the horn here on the neighbors, I'm sure there's some linguistic similarities.
Sure.
But as far as I know, Hungary is not part of any there's no family tree of languages.
That includes that, Hungarian.
Yes, they said the closest thing that there is maybe Estonian and maybe Finland.
Way far away.
And then it said, and by close, I mean the way that English and Hindi are close.
Oh, sure, they're really close. So, I was talking to somebody in Hindi.
So now you can get a sense of how unclose it is to its nearest relative, which is not, it doesn't even border the country.
So they have this bizarrely unique language right in the middle of You know, an area where, honestly, there was a lot of cross-fertilization and pollination.
Exactly. So there must be tribes coming and going and mixing and mingling and intermarrying and stuff like that. And, I mean, for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And yet it's still...
And despite all that, they maintained the language.
Well, yeah. I just find that fascinating.
That is interesting.
So then let's move. Let's hurry on up to the 9th century, which is when... King Arpad unified the group. So that's okay. Kind of what they think of as
the beginning. The beginning,
like, okay. Right. So that big statue in Budapest, that's going to be Arpad.
Now there's something funny about the word Budapest. I remember this. I have a vague recollection of this, and I should have looked it up before the show. But it's called Budapest because of it was the intersection between. You know, it's right in the province or something of Pest.
Right.
But it was it was right between two things, and they merged them to make Budapest.
Okay.
I don't remember what the details were. I'll have to look that one up.
Yes, yeah, so and then when you're seeing the, you know, they do the timeline and the borders of Hungary.
Right.
Right. So it was much larger, much smaller, sure. You know, over every hundreds of years. And right now it got reduced after World War I. Well, hold on. Let's get up to, you got the Habsburgs coming
in.
We went
a long way from the 9th century to World War I.
Yeah. You know, let's just quickly move through, you know, fighting off the Huns, fighting off the, I assume that. There was some relationship between the Huns and Hungary. There's nothing there.
No.
There's
okay.
nothing there. And they kind of fought off the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. They were encroached on by the Ottoman Empire. Then the Habsburgs came in, kicked out the Turks. Now it's part of the Habsburg family.
But did they retain their language through all of that?
Through all of that. Then they became... So they became part of the... then they became... In 1867, became equal partners. And then you had the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And... then some guy gets shot in Serbia. A Habsburg, right. by the way.
Yeah.
A Habsburg gets shot in Serbia. Then you've got... Then they got on the German side of things... And at the end of World War I, it became Austria and Hungary again.
Mm-hmm.
And then the commies rolled in and controlled things.
Well, after World War II.
After World War II, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so my understanding is the Nazis came in.
Yeah.
And then in 1944.
The Hungarian.
And they were only there for a year. And then in 1945, the Soviets... kicked out Hitler, and then the Soviets were in charge of Hungary for
making a mess of things.
46 years until 1991.
All right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So here we are in 1991 in modern. I don't know how these what these countries did when everybody was a communist. You know, because anybody in politics is going to be a communist, right? It's not like there was a bunch of democratic parties out there waiting for their chance to take power.
Right.
And then when the Soviets pull out, it just seems that period of now refinding yourself after a complete generation.
Yeah, so my understanding is that even when the Soviets were in charge of Russia, there was a lot of underground traditional Russian stuff going on. There was still Orthodoxy and other things survive and... Mm-hmm. I mean, when in the Soviet Union. So then apparently the same kind of thing could have been going on in Hungary when the Soviets were in charge of Hungary, that there was still a lot of traditional sentiments, you know, preserved mm-hmm. by grandmothers and so on.
Very good. So you had... So how does that work? So the Soviet Union say, all right, we're not going to... tell everybody what to do anymore, and then the country itself goes, all right, it's time for free and fair elections.
Well, yeah, so I'm not really up on the process of how the Soviets got out of
there. Yeah, me neither.
But, you know, I listened to a lecture by Viktor Orban about how they defeated the Soviets, how they defeated the communists and how they defeated the liberals. And I wasn't very interested in the how they defeated the Soviets part.
Right.
So I didn't glean much from that, but we're going to get to later on his 12-part plan for beating the liberals. But from his perspective, Hungary first beat back the problem of the Soviet influence, and then they found out that the Soviets and modern-day liberals were basically bedfellows.
Right.
And then they had to use similar kinds of tactics to push back against the liberals.
Right. And so he just won his fourth right premiership.
Yes.
And that overwhelmingly.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, which is amazing. He's really got something going right over there.
Right. So,
although the EU doesn't like him.
Right. And so he came into the EU with a bunch of other East, because original European Union was all Western.
Right. Yes.
And then gradually, I guess,
a lot of countries have applied for membership into the EU, and they have all these strict standards. If you're not recycling enough, they won't let you into the, I'm serious.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They have these things that if you're not doing things the EU way, then they don't want to admit you.
Right. The unelected bureaucrats in Brussels.
Yes.
What was it? That's where people who couldn't get elected go to.
Yeah, exactly. if you lose in France, then you get appointed to someplace in Brussels.
Great. So right when nobody liked your ideas in France, that's okay. You have plenty of chance to impose them without the threat of being. But without the threat of democracy,
yeah.
And you can impose it on all of Europe.
That's right. So I wanted to find out a little bit about what the EU had against Hungary.
Right.
Because Hungary was admitted.
Okay.
But now the EU is not really very pleased with Hungary. And I read a bunch of articles from a leftist perspective on what they don't like about Hungary. And they were saying things like, well, we have the EU has these standards for admitting people, but they don't have any way to deal with people who backslide from their perspective.
Uh-huh.
If they come in and seem like they're following and then they change their mind and start doing things a different way,
right.
The EU doesn't have a good way to deal with that.
Right. So they got in before it was imposed upon them to flood their country with North African migrants. And so when the EU said, our new policy is going to be... Then the people who were already in the EU were...
Yeah, so the EU...
Somehow...
Restrictions on migrants is a big one. From the EU perspective, they feel as if Hungary is backsliding on democratic norms, by which they mean there's supposed to be subjugation of courts, media, NGOs, and academia. So they're afraid that Hungary is kind of cracking down on a lot of these institutions that... are sometimes kind of leftist institutions, which makes sense in light of Orban.
Yeah.
But then there's also Hungary passed a sovereignty law, which gives the state the power to investigate individuals and organizations that undermine the country's sovereignty.
Yeah.
Which
sounds
like that could be a good thing or that could be a bad thing. You get that in the hands of a totalitarian and they're going around arresting their political enemies and that sort of thing.
I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, and then the last one I had on my list was opposition to aid to Ukraine. The EU wants Hungary to give money. Apparently Hungary has allowed a lot of Ukrainian migrants to come in, and they're happy to help the people, but they don't want to get involved in the war in any way.
Right. Yeah. Which, I don't think Americans, and definitely me, can fully understand the size and closeness of countries in Europe, right? So, I mean, wars for us are just always on the other side of the planet.
Right.
And, Budapest to Kyiv is probably, I don't know, from here to Boston or something like that.
Right, yeah, not very far.
Yeah. I mean, there could be actually, you could be living in this province bordering Ukraine, and there is war going on in Philadelphia.
Right.
And you're living your life here. And,
yeah,
that's not
a good deal.
So, right, so the criticism is, how they're super pro-Russian. Well, I'm kind of feeling that 46 years of under the thumb. They're not particularly pro-Russian, but they know that that's where all the oil and gas comes from. And they also don't see that we're doing anything except for extending a war that Russia has the resources.
My impression is that a lot of Eastern Europe, because of recent history, has a tendency to look to Russia as sort of like Big Brother.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that they approve of everything that Russia does, but they just kind of look up to them in a certain way,
yeah,
you know?
Right. And sometimes your big brother's a jerk.
Yeah.
But yes, you still acknowledge
him. He's still your big brother. That's right. Yeah. So I don't see Hungary as being pro-Putin or anything. You know, in the lecture I heard from Orban, he was saying, you know, look, Russia is the aggressor and Ukraine is the victim.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't like trying to defend Putin for his invasion of Ukraine or anything. He's just saying our people, you know, war is, not only does it kill a lot of people, it also hurts things economically. War doesn't help. And
yeah,
the Hungarians just don't want to be involved in that.
Right.
If there are people flooding the borders, yes, let's help the people. But yeah, we don't want to be involved. We don't want to get too deep into this.
Yeah.
Which, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they lost half their army in World War II, and, you know, fairly recent memory, and the
yeah,
war's unpleasant, and...
Yeah, and never helps anybody.
And, but, you know, they have a Hungary first mentality.
Yes.
And so maybe they don't want to deplete their defense, you know, money.
Right.
To...
Yeah, so I'd like to get into Orban's 12 points, but before we do that, there are some other interesting things going on in Hungary about like them trying to promote traditional values in.
Well, so this whole thing got started by this Daily Signal podcast called "Hungary in a Last Warning to the West."
Yeah.
And so this woman who worked for you know, some international agency spent some time in Hungary and found them, the Hungarians, who had looked to America for 46 years as the model of freedom and classical liberalism,
yeah,
are now looking at America and going,
what are you doing?
What are you doing? This
right,
looks so much like communism,
yeah,
that we've seen this before. And you get this from all kinds of people who, ex-Chinese,
yeah,
people who've escaped
right,
communism, Vietnamese,
yes,
who come over here and they look at universities and institutions and are going, we've seen this before,
yeah,
and we know where this goes.
We thought you guys were the other.
And that's why we came here.
Right.
Because we weren't going to
And then
to
we come over here and we find out the same poison that we fled from. Yes.
So she was saying in this last warning was that the Hungarians are now worried for us.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we should look to them as a model. We are the model.
Yes.
Just that we're not following our own proper principles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so so what you came across was some of these same points.
Yeah. So I listened to this lecture by Orban. He gave it in, I didn't really listen to it. It was in Hungarian, which I don't know. So I read the captions, and he has a 12-point plan, which was interesting. You know, I was just recently looking up Saul Alinsky's, you know,
yeah,
playbook,
yeah,
and there's a point. Well, here's Orban's plan.
Right,
the first one is,
here.
Yeah, play by your own rules. Refuse to accept the solutions and paths offered by others,
okay,
which I like that one. National conservatism in domestic politics. And this is going to tie into the family thing.
Yeah.
Churches and families are the building blocks of the nation. I thought that was a bold kind of a statement to make.
It shouldn't,
you know,
be, but in
yeah,
these days it is.
Yeah. And so you need to have policies to support churches and families. And that gets to the, what's the thing in Hungary? If you have a couple of kids, then.
Yeah. So they have all kinds of tax policies. Well, once you get to the immigration part, he says, we're not having enough kids. What countries have to do is import immigrants to make up for the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we don't need immigrants. We need more Hungarians.
Right.
So let's implement policies to encourage more Hungarians.
Yes.
And they involve the reduction or the elimination of income tax for, I think, up to 3 kids while they're growing up. But once you hit number 4 and more,
no taxes.
No taxes forever.
Yeah, well, that would be nice.
That would be nice. And the other policy that I liked had to do with, so ideally, the mother would stay home and raise the kids. You can't always do that. So they have a system where you can pay grandparents to be the caregivers.
Yeah.
And, you know, right, rather than stick your kids in daycare, you may, you know, parents or grandparents are usually, the first line.
Yeah.
But now you sweeten the deal a little bit.
Yeah. Which encourages a lot of good things. For example, it encourages children to live near their parents so that their grandparents can provide that kind of care. Right. So the family doesn't separate everyone. Yep. But it also preserves, you know, the grandparents have a much better connection to their grandchildren than some stranger, kind of thing.
Creepy daycare.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's just fantastic. All right, let's move on here. Yes. National interest in foreign policy. This is Hungary first. You know, yeah. Donald Trump says America first, and Viktor Orban says Hungary first.
That's good.
You know,
yes.
One thing he said in his talk was, liberals see some sort of cosmic battle between good and evil. He says, you know, we've tried that. There have been some wars to end all wars, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And his response is simple. Hungary first, we want a foreign policy that's based on our interests. I was like, okay, fine. Number 4, have your own media. Expose your opponent's intentions. I thought this was interesting. He says left-wing opinions only appear to be the majority because the media amplifies them.
Yes.
And the West used to believe in this idea that politics and news and media should be separate.
but when journalists were just journalists.
Yeah, but that's totally gone now. Now it used to be, here's the government and here's the people, and the media were like between them. Now it's here's the government and the media is broadcasting the government message to the people.
Yes.
Been a complete...
in terms of social media, just plain working on behalf.
Yes, working on behalf of the government. It's amazing. It's really amazing. I wasn't really clear on number 5, break down taboos. So they try to expose what the left are preparing to do before they even do it.
Yeah, if you can get a step on them, then that's good. But
that's going to relate to another point later on, which has to do with reading books. Number 6, economy, economy, economy.
Okay.
And he says the left wants to operate economies according to these abstract notions, but what people want are jobs and a better life. They don't want economic theories. They don't care about economic theories. They want a job, and they want their kids to be better off. How do you argue with that?
Or is that?
No. Yeah. Don't get pushed to the extremes. And I think this is a really key one because some conservatives have been going into some kind of crazy conspiracy theories.
Uh-huh.
And he's saying, avoid that. Don't get anywhere near that.
All right.
You know, because you alienate a large portion of your audience, you end up looking like an idiot.
Right. So, right. Just from a practical maintain your base kind of way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. A book a day keeps the defeat away.
Mm.
He says he dedicates an entire day every week for reading.
Whoa.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And not comic books, Joe. Your real books.
Yeah. I'm not sure Joe can even read the wrapper on his ice cream cone, to tell you the truth. Okay. Have faith. A lack of faith is dangerous. I thought this was interesting. If you don't believe there will be a final reckoning and that you are accountable to God, you will think you can do anything that's in your power.
Oof.
That's a tough one.
Well, that kind of goes back to, you know, promoting church and family.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Make friends. And this is an interesting one because, like, in the United States, the Democrats always seem to get all in line. You know,
what kind of horrible thing one of their members has done, they circle the wagons anyway.
And they act as a party. You know, the whole party gets together and has something and they stick to that.
Reagan Republicans try to encourage that.
Yes.
And apparently there's a big statue of Reagan in
Budapest. Hungary.
Yeah.
Yes. But the conservatives are always fighting over anything. And that look for common ground, ways to work with others. And then build communities. I like that one because, you know, communities are, Ben Shapiro likes to talk about how things like bowling clubs and, you know, just the neighborhood things are a big part of culture that we've lost. People don't do that kind of stuff anymore.
I mean, even recently, in the 60s, you know, being a part of, you know, the Democratic Club, the Lions Club, all of those things were more important than the next generation, less important. And I think now online communities have replaced it, which is horrible.
Just garbage.
No, it's a terrible substitute.
Yeah,
because these people aren't your neighbors.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with meeting people online, but you need to have real world, actual connections with people, and then build institutions. And he's talking about all kinds of things: think tanks, youth organizations, whatever. But the idea is you need a engine for new ideas, new thoughts, and new people. That's like your...
But the institution, the government should be promoting the institutions that are promoting family and church.
Yes.
And so, you know, not promoting organizations that hate the country, you know, or, you know, something wholesome like the Boy Scouts, and then say, oh, but girls can join too.
Yeah, right.
Which just means, well, what you're trying to do is destroy the Boy Scouts.
Right. Well, how can it be the Boy Scouts if it's
Yes.
Yeah.
So, don't encourage things that undermine the things you're trying to promote.
Right. Sure. Well, what a concept.
Gosh.
Yeah. So then in the end, he said, there's no silver bullet, only work. You know, here's 12 things to work on. There's not one magical thing that you can do. And it's very easy to have that attitude. We just want to find the thing that's going to save us. You know, if we do this, you just got to do all these things and work at it.
And now we've got, I mean, they're great, but what are we doing? Why do we have to look to Hungary? That's terrible that we're in this position.
Yes.
Where we have to look at ex-communists to tell us you're being commies. And stop it, because we do still admire you, but we're watching you slit your own wrist.
Yeah, how did we get, that might be a topic for another day, how did we become such a mess? How did we fall off the pedestal of being the light on the hill and, you know, the city set on a hill?
Yeah, a self-loathing nation.
Yes. And, you know, this, in my mind, this tied for me back to the concept of the suicide of the West. Which is what's the book, The Strange Death of the West? Our English friend.
Here, Western civilization changed the planet and has been the inspiration for democracy and technology and could not be defeated in any military way. And so we just decided, just kill ourselves.
So we're killing ourselves in a lot of ways. We're killing ourselves by not having enough children.
Yeah.
And then killing the children that we might have had. And then, since we're not having enough children, we bring in immigrants to replace us. It's almost...
But don't ask them to embrace the principles.
Yes.
Because you've just declared that you're, you know, ashamed of your own...
Exactly. It's like the West has become ashamed of its own existence and wants to destroy itself.
Yeah, I mean, this was 20 years ago, I'm like, if the Brits can't be proud of their history, then there is no future for us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not really, people outside are seeing it better than we are because we're inside.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you get, like I said, the Hungarians and the Vietnamese and the Chinese going, what are you people doing? We've seen this playbook.
How do you import people who don't believe in your laws, don't believe in your culture, want to replace you, want to kill you, want to subjugate you?
Yeah, and you ask nothing of them.
Yeah, it's insane. And fortunately, Hungary realizes it's insane and has said, "No, we're not going to do this.
No, we're not.
No, we want Hungarians in Hungary."
Well, what do you mean? How can you not? What? We don't.
What you're doing. Yes, we see what you're doing elsewhere. It's self-destructive. It's stupid. We're not going to do that.
This guy should be looking at a fifth term here.
I hope so. And I think, well, it would be nice if we would learn from what Viktor Orbán is doing. And I don't know everything that this guy's done. He might be doing some stupid things. He might be doing some horrible things.
I'm sure somebody could come up with 10 points why we should not. Yeah, all right. Whatever. I'm just saying broadly. He's Hungary first. He's traditional values. He's pro-family. Mm-hmm. He's not going to let outside influences dictate that we should commit suicide. Mm-hmm. So on that level, I'm pro-Orbán.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems to be doing the right kinds of things.
So I would say he is my my favorite European leader right now.
And well, it's a low bar.
It is a low bar. I'm going to, here, let me, as a leading up to my man of the week.
Yes.
I'm going to let me just go around the planet real quick and give you, I would say my favorite North American leader is DeSantis. Mm-hmm. Central America, I'm going with Bukele.
Okay.
South America, we got our guy in Argentina, Javier Milei.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Orbán. In Asia.
Yeah.
Whoever's running Singapore.
Yes.
I think the prime minister is the son of the guy who, you know,
did the whole thing. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Lee Hoon Kwan.
Right.
I think. But they have the prime minister and president kind of a thing. So, yeah. Whatever okay. Singapore's doing.
Yeah.
Now we got Africa.
Okay.
We're talking about low bar.
Yeah. Is there anybody in Africa who's doing a good job right now?
Well, this is how I'm getting to my man of the week.
Okay.
Believe it or not. It's El Sisi of Egypt.
Yeah.
Only because I would like you to take a look at this big, beautiful wall between Egypt and what do you
mean? Gaza. Yeah. I saw this. Yeah.
So hold on. It's like seven layers deep.
Yeah.
Well, right. It's two walls.
There's a road in between
so you could run the military through.
Right.
Then you've got a couple of rows of...
You got razor wire and you've got walls.
Some more things down here. Yeah. I don't know what those are.
It would be serious. You'd have to be pretty serious to try to get through there.
So the left would tell me that if I say no Palestinians should come to America, that's both Islamophobic and racist.
But Egypt does it.
Seven layers deep.
There are no,
why is there? Why is that?
There are no Arab countries that are allowing Palestinian refugees from Gaza.
Because they know them best.
Well,
and whatever they know.
So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that by not accepting them, they're basically using the people in Gaza the way we're using the people in Ukraine. They're using them as cannon fodder to support their hatred. The Arab countries are using the poor Palestinians in Gaza as props, as sacrifices, as martyrs to promote their "we need to put pressure on Israel" agenda.
Okay, I will give you that up until the last 5 years.
Okay,
that has been the understanding of they. They want to keep the problem there,
mm-hmm.
to highlight that, to create problems for Israel.
Yeah.
But once they started recognizing Israel, then that's why I'm going back to my original then position on their on the Palestinians. They just don't want them in their country.
Well,
they've already they're kicked out of Jordan, even though Jordan is mostly Palestinian.
Yeah.
But they don't put up with any of their BS.
Well, you know, what they have done is Gaza has been a festering training ground for people to be trained in hatred and martyrdom and
from kindergarten
on, they're taught ridiculous, disgusting attitudes towards Jews and towards Jews. And you're right. I mean, why would you want those people in your country?
Why would you want those people in your country? And
they were useful. They were useful. Not idiots is the wrong word. They were useful martyrs. They were useful whatevers for an Arab cause against Israel. But now, do you want those people? So what are you going to do with them?
Keep them the hell out with a big, beautiful wall.
But isn't it funny that the left is so, you know, the idea that we would have a wall, that's awful.
Yeah.
But Is anybody yelling at Egypt for their wall?
Let's get that thing.
I know. That wall makes Donald Trump's wall look like nothing. And, I don't see anybody complaining about their wall.
I don't. Well, so, people, you might have not realized that we've got things to learn from Hungary.
Yeah.
But I think we do.
I think we do. And I also hear that Hungarian women are very fun.
Yes, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's a very difficult language to speak. But
it has nothing to do with any language that we might know.
But I think as a result, I'm sure there's plenty of people. They know that. And they're not expecting anybody coming from outside.
I'll bet you a lot of people in Eastern Europe know English.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yes. They have no.
They don't expect an American
that tourists are coming in.
You're not going to learn my language.
Don't worry about it.
I'll just
learn
yours.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks so much for listening to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Remember to visit us at pigweedandcrowhill.com or send us an email at pigweedshow@gmail.com.